Blog Talk Radio.
From the great state of Texas in beautiful downtown Honey Grove, it's The Richard Show, and my name is Richard Dave, your host, and I'm thankful that you're here. I wanted to start out here. The failure of made Disney great, the benefits of raw milk, cutting down on sugar. Four reasons General James Mattis might be your man for president. Pew Religious Americans, and we'll start there now. Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Richard Davey, and today I want to start here. Religious Americans are happier with their lives. Gee, is that a revelation that we didn't know about? Recent survey conducted by the Pew Research Center found that religious Americans are overall happier with their lives. Those deemed highly religious, I'm one, and who say they pray daily and attend religious services weekly were 11% more likely to say they were very happy. Among less religious Americans, only 29% described themselves as being very happy, while 40% of participants identified as religious said they were very happy. Highly religious adults are more engaged with family, more likely to volunteer, and happier overall. Gee, I wonder why. Because we're not of the world. We are in the world, and we believe, or is that opposite? Anyway, here's the point. In the end, we love one another. We pray for one another. We help each other, which if you've never done that, there's great fulfillment in helping another person, helping another, as we say. And so even when you may need help or need some sort of support, you typically lend yourself. If somebody came or you saw an opportunity, this is religious people, they tend to reach out. And that's not suggesting that other people don't. That just means that, again, this is a Pew report that is suggesting that religious people are happier. They volunteer. And they get involved with the community. Religious Americans also gather with extended family more often and donate their time and money to the poor. More frequently, 65% of those identified as highly religious said they gave their time and or money to help the poor in the past week, while only 40% of the Americans, less religious Americans, did so. There's something about giving. You get. And I don't mean money all the time. Sometimes it's just your time, your ear, right, because you're listening. In fact, that reminds me of a recent time that I went out and visited some folks I haven't been with in a long time. This guy is probably the most incredible person I've ever met. I mean, here's a guy from a young age, adventuresome, which we're going to get his story on the air here in another couple of weeks, adventuresome and committed to God. Here's a guy that took his family over to the Amazon and over to Brazil and lived his life on the land, if you will, for God and depended on God to totally take care of him. Now, here's a guy that's well-adjusted, he's happy, his family are well-adjusted, they're happy, and they've made a commitment to helping others. Religious Americans also gather with extended family. That's important. They donate their time and money to the poor. More frequently, 65% of those identified highly religious said they gave their time and money to help the poor in the past week. On average, religious Americans get together with extended family at least once or twice a month, with only 30% of less religious participants said they gathered with family approximately monthly. So, is this a revelation? Probably not, but it is a good barometer of where we're at and why we need to continue to connect. Okay, well, we're on the eve of Tax Day. I want to talk a little bit more. I've been talking about that over the last couple of weeks, and wanted to highlight an article from Foundation of Economics and Education, FEE. You can go to FEE.com and check out this article for yourself and read more. I mean, this is a think tank, so to speak, of liberty-minded people that will give you information that will help you. A tax income and tax life itself, our lives, our liberties are unsafe so long as they exist. Interesting, because we have, you know, Ted Cruz, which I'm in favor of and have been supporting since the very beginning. In fact, I support, I should say, him on his run for senator here in Texas. And I agree with his 10% tax plan. It certainly beats the progressive tax plan that we currently have. Is there more we can do? I think there is. Is it even necessary to have an income tax? With that money, now, if he were to say to me, we're going to use that money, Rich, to pay the debt down, and once that's done, I'm going to have it written into law, it's going to be taken away, then I guess I'm open to that idea. However, there are many other things he's doing in his proposal for president, his run for president, and one of them is getting rid of the IRS and many other defunct departments that our government continues to support that need to go away, and he highlights them. Go to his website, tedcruz.org, I believe, and you'll get to read his future plans for a more liberty-minded and freer country. And I believe in the end he's right, but I have a problem with the 10% tax, because prior to 1913, there was no income tax. And then when we did have any kind of tax, it was temporary. So the progressive tax sticks in 1913, along with an arm of the Federal Reserve called the IRS, that is the tax collectors, the thugs. They go out and collect those taxes from people and steal everything they own to get that money. And ultimately, in the end, we're the ones really left holding the bag, paying for a bureaucracy that has, once again, failed us. I mean, you've got people making $80,000 a year working for the IRS. Average American in business, 50. Wow, what's going on with that? Well, I think the idea behind it is the more you pay people, the more they're willing to do for you. They're willing to go to any depths to protect their own income. Look at the unions. Look what they did to America and to Americans. Union people, and maybe have a different perspective today, like my dad, that the unions were necessary. Well, no, I don't really think they are. In fact, if you go back and look at it, the unions come out of the Communist Manifesto. It's predicted in there what it can and will do. Well, it did. It separated us. It divided us. Oh, it gave, you know, certain people that were part of the good old boy club a higher income than the others. But did they even think for a moment that that was sustainable, A, and B, did they ever think that there was something very wrong with that approach, that they should be elevated up because they're part of the club and everybody else struggles? Doing the same thing. Something's wrong with that thinking. We never were that way in America. And we didn't need groups or associations. I think we're too many associations, too many people. Hey, you got to be, oh, you want to be part of this club? You got to pay the dues and you got to become a member. You got to sign in, pal. Well, I don't agree with that. I started a group recently I called the Gento, which is really Benjamin Franklin's group from 1727. I'm getting off of what I wanted to talk about today, but here's the point in the end. I'm done with associations and groups. I think if we're going to build a new and stronger America, we need to get away from all this idea of dues and, hey, let's go join Sam's Club so we can buy at a better price. Wait a minute. They're buying at higher volume. You're buying bigger volumes when you buy from them. That's where the money is acquired, if you will, or the revenues for the corporation, for the company. So what's the $50 a year do? Oh, they can justify it, and most people go along with it. I disagree with it. You want me to shop at your store? I'm willing to buy in bigger volume. That's what you're forcing on me, and I'm okay with that if I can get a cheaper price. I'm going to need it anyway, and I've got room, right, at home, if you do. But in the end, you're paying for the privilege of shopping in a store that's benefiting from your sale. I'm sorry. I don't get that thinking. I think it's wrong, and I think that's part of the problem in America. Too many groups, too many associations, too many clubs that we need to join. Hey, you got to join. You got to join, and you got to pay the dues, and you got to sign in the dotted line. I think that's where we got in trouble. I mean, you look at beauticians today. They got to go out and get all this certification and get state licensed before they can cut your freaking hair. Get over it, man. We need to get away from all that nonsense. That's control. Oh, well, we need established level. No, no, no. We, as a free market, establish that. If that individual doesn't represent themselves well and or do a good job, they don't make it. That's the way America used to be prior to all this nonsense. And it's socialist and communist, by the way. Go read Karl Marx and Engels' Communist Manifesto. Before you do, if you're married, talk to your wife. Ask her to pray for you and to keep you coherent and in reality. Because when you read it, and I have, you go dark. You start reading a lot of this stuff from evil people that is being implemented. Why do you want to read it? So you understand it. That's why. It's important to understand why your world is the way it is and why things are happening. You're going, I don't agree with that. Well, where did it start? Who came up with this idea? America is an idea. Freedom and liberty. Never been done. Never been held as long as it has in history of mankind, and yet we've done it. And from the very beginning, evil, like people that like Karl Marx and Engels, they propagate this stuff. Why? Because they're evil. There's nothing good that comes out of communism and socialism. Sorry. People die. People are controlled. In fact, if you, or as Barack Obama in September of this past year said, 2030, Agenda 2030, what was Agenda 21? One world order, government taken over, and how does it done? How's it done locally? ICLEI, it's called ICLEI, I-C-L-I-E, I don't know, go look it up, Agenda 21, it's on there, go agenda21.com, you'll find it. And when you do, be prepared, again, to have somebody pull you out because it gets dark. If you're not married, have a friend. Hey, I'm going to be reading this stuff, and I just want you to know I'm not crazy, and I don't want to go crazy. I don't want to go into the darkness and not come out because there is light, and we're attracted to sunlight, aren't we? Anyway, I just get passionate about these things. I think it's important that we learn these things and at least be aware of them. I mean, maybe that's not your thing. So you listen to it from some crazed individual on the radio. Somebody that has dedicated his life to doing good for others and improving our situation. We're not heading in a good direction, people. And if we're going to change that, we, the people, have to do it. Okay. So a tax on income, a tax life itself, the least of the problems with income tax is that it takes your money. The really big problem is that the income tax takes your life. It gives the government direct access to things you own and set up the political bureaucratic sector to be the final arbiter of what you can and cannot consider to be yours. Illustrating this point is this bitter realization that the IRS considers it completely legal to demand access to your electronic communications wherever it wants. This news came about in 2013 because of the Freedom Information Act request filed by the American Civil Liberty Union. The filing unearthed in 2009 memo stated outright the Fourth Amendment does not protect the communication held in electronic storage. Oh, really? Such an email message stored on a server because internet users do not have reasonable expectation of privacy in such communications. Do you agree with that? I don't. I believe the Fourth Amendment does cover that. This is a play on words. It allows them to get in there and disrupt that. Forget search warrants and legal process. In the interest of getting its share, the government can have it all on demand. This assertion was made again in 2010 by the IRS chief counsel. The Fourth Amendment does not protect emails stored on a server. There is no privacy expectation on email. This assertion openly contradicts a 2010 legal decision from the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, United States versus Warshak. You can look these things up. United States versus Warshak. Plug it into Google, man. It'll come up. And that the government must obtain a probable cause warrant before forcing people to provide, to cough up email archives. Granted, even that's not much protection. Government always has its probable cause, doesn't it? Good for the ACLU for making an issue of this, but at some level, it's all besides the point. The problem isn't the legal process that allows the government to do what it wants. The problem that government has a hook into personal income that allows powerful people to have their way with the whole of your life. As we look back in history, we can see that the income tax enabled a century of intrusions into our lives. It's been 100 years, a form of imposition that no American in most of the 19th century could have ever imagined or tolerated. The income tax is what enabled prohibition. For example, without the ability to monitor and adjudicate how people made money, the power of enforcement would not have been there at all. Remember that Al Capone was not convicted for bootlegging, but for tax evasion. Did you get that? Again, come and read this article for yourself. The root of all evil, intensified over decades, Okay, we're gonna wrap this up right now. Many Americans are sweating it out to get their taxes done in time for filing deadline. It would be immeasurably hard without brilliant companies that have put together software programs updated constantly and make what would otherwise seem impossible rather easy. This is the type of thing that free enterprises and private sector do. They help us to have better lives. But government, what does it do? It snoops, it controls, and it destroys. This is written by Jeffrey Tucker. If you're not familiar with Jeffrey, he writes some amazing stories. I would encourage you to go to FE.com to check that out. Four reasons General James Mattis should be president. Well, if you don't know who James Mattis is, he's been in the buzz in the last week or two. He's a Marine, as am I. And he's a very outspoken Marine. In fact, he's been called General James Mad Dog Mattis. Among his higher profile military achievements during more than four decades in the Marine Corps, Mattis led the successful 2003 charge in Baghdad to be back insurgents' attacks in Fallujah. Although his war-fighting prowess is enough to give him a notoriety, he is most famous for his tough, colorful talk and willingness to say unpopular things. He once said he recently surrounded a group of Iraqi generals. "I come in peace," he told them. "I didn't bring artillery. But I'm pleading with you with tears in my eyes. If you fool with me, I'll kill you all." In speech dubbed Dispelling the PTSD Myth, Mathis challenged, "There is no room for military people, including our veterans, to see themselves as victims, even if so many of our countrymen are prone and relish that role." Few people could get away with comics like that, but few people have enough credibility with veterans as Mattis. So here's a guy that kind of reminds you of Patton. I think he's a Patton kind of guy. He's a plain-spoken, plain kind of even-keeled kind of guy, common sense, if you will, that is making a difference in our military. He's a Marine. And here's something, let's see. He also sought to provoke his civilian bosses to think about how their decisions would cause second and third order consequences. For a perfect sampling of his teaching style and concerns, take a look at his testimony before the Senate Armed Service Committee. Rather than giving the standard, "This is how we are achieving the president's strategy," story, he told the senators which question they should ask. A few of the questions included, "Is political Islam in our best interest? If not, what is our policy to support the countervailing forces? In light of worldwide challenges to the international order, are we nonetheless shrinking our military? Are we adjusting our strategy and taking into account a reduced role for a shrunken military?" Now, I would have to say, here's a guy that's got a lot of common sense and is practical in his thinking. Unsurprisingly, an administration unfriendly towards the center, the generous question style and objections earned him early retirement with little fanfare. In other words, hey, buddy, you don't fit in here. We don't want to hear all this rhetoric about goodness and how you want to question us. We're the ones in charge here. And you'll listen to us. So they sent him on his way. Now I hope if this guy who is who he claims he is and who we read to be, I hope that President Ted Cruz will have him in his cabinet. Because here's a guy that he needs that will take on the military complex, the industrial complex that is rooted in evil. It's become that. Sorry, folks. If you're not aware of that, do your history. I think Eisenhower said it best that, you know, one of the rising problems in America is not Americans, but rather the industrial complex, the military-industrial complex. Too interconnected with big and Google and others. Just not a good idea. We need a complete shakeup of the Pentagon, and I pray that this man that we will elect, I believe, President Ted Cruz, will make that difference. He understands and loves America. The story goes on. Anyone who has spent time with him will tell you that Mattis, although extraordinarily outstanding man among impressive men, is humble. He does not consider himself better than his subordinates or better than political class, than the political class that makes modern war fighting so difficult. I'll let you read the rest of the article. I'm going to highlight a few of these other things that make him a interesting cabinet possibility for the Cruz administration. He opposes moral clarity. He will win. In other words, when he takes on something, he's a bulldog. He goes after it. He is a perpetual student of history and people. Boy, is that important. Like Trump and Cruz, Mattis is not a successful professional politician, and that would be appealing to people. But unlike Trump, who's decidedly incurious, Mattis has a voracious appetite for reading, learning, and applying the lessons he learns. That's what I'm talking about. We must read and apply. An administration run by a man like this suggests two departures from what we've witnessed from the Obama administration. One, Mattis would like to would look at things as they are always. I'm sorry, as they are and always have been, rather than as he wishes them to be or hopes to make them. Unlike President Obama, who seems to be in a constant state of surprise, Mattis cannot be surprised. Why? Because the man's plugged in. He understands what's going on. That's what we need. Enough already with the community organizers, okay? Okay, getting into health. Constant, sugar consumption has risen. Obesity, diabetes rates have skyrocketed worldwide. For the first time in history, obese people outnumber those who are underweight, and pre-diabetes affects half of all U.S. adults. It's gotten this bad. It has gotten this bad is because health professionals have mistakenly assumed they understand the cause of obesity and diabetes. Their flawed recommendations have fueled these epidemics. You can read that at Mercola.com, why cutting down on sugar might be the best health insurance available. I encourage you to do that. Mercola.com, why cutting down on sugar might be the best health insurance available. By the way, we found out a little bit about our history on insurance back here a while back in Dallas, Texas, through the Baylor system. Yes, they're the ones that started it all. And, you know, when, with that, collective thinking became a pool of wealth that you and I contributed to so that they could raise their prices and do whatever they wanted to do. Well, here we are today with an out-of-control medical care system that I call disease care, and ultimately in the end, we're paying the price. We're footing the bill through higher taxes. They've done it many, many ways through Medicare and Medicaid, through our institutions of higher learning, and the hospitals themselves, and yet they keep being built. Yeah, I mean, anybody questioning that at all? I mean, these beautiful, big, beautiful buildings keep going up. What do they know or what do they have that we don't? And yet, the number of beds are declining, if you will, and that is what they focused on in the early part of the century to change that. As they said, the average American was spending $5 a year on medical care. Well, we can't have that if we're going to build this medical establishment that will be the best in the world. And we did. It was looked at as the best in the world. Isn't that interesting? Through pharmaceutical drugs. We went from holistic approaches to healthcare and to using what God gave us on the earth to a corrupt, very money-motivated, system of medical care. And it should be disease care because that's what they're doing. They're creating the disease, and then they're administering the potion to cure your disease. Or not cure it, to hide it. Raw milk and cheese are undergoing a renaissance as artisanal foods rise in popularity, and organic foods have risen in popularity. Artisan food, like raw organic cheese and milk, are also undergoing a renaissance. PBS, which I'm not a big fan of, I believe that's an arm of the government, Food Forward episode addresses the problem of overprocessing and stresses the importance of raw milk as long as it's done correctly. Raw milk and cheese have been wrongly demonized as hazardous primarily by the conventional dairy industry and those who do not understand the health benefits of live foods. Agreed. The problem with PBS is they're going to give you a little bit of truth and they're going to twist it because they're influenced by these big corporations and by our government. I have a problem with that. So I would say watch it, learn what you can, but do your own homework because ultimately in the end, that's what's going to count because you'll be able to then, as you watch these documentaries, you'll be able to pick out what's true and what's not, what they're trying to influence you in a different way. Okay. Wanted to get to the Disney story. Again, you can go to FEE.com to read that. It's amazing. I'll pick up on that next show. Thank you for listening to the show, and may you have a healthy and prosperous week. and we'll see you again on Wednesday.